Their thought seems alien and superstitious to moderns because it is not according to their convention, a convention that recognizes only one kind of thinking, a thinking carried on in words. But there is another kind of thinking which is an equally efficacious instrument for arriving at the truth. This thinking is carried on in pictorial images instead of word images, and the images are combined together into pictures instead of sentences, but the pictures have their own grammar and logic in their own idiom, and for dealing with certain kinds of material they are far superior to the verbal method, though translation into the modern idiom is the final stage of the process. In both psychology and magic, the true art lies in the reduction of the material made available to consciousness, whether derived from the spontaneous dream or induced vision, to such form that it is readily assimilable by the understanding and related to the science and art of living. For this purpose, psychology has in dream analysis through free association a technique for gaining access to the deeper levels of consciousness, and in particular for picking out a given factor at will and working with it and no other, which is unknown to psychology, so far, at any rate, as the published word reveals it. There may be psychologists who are occultists, but as far as my experience goes, there are precious few occultists who are psychologists, and those that are keep their knowledge in watertight compartments for the good and excellent reason that they fear that if they did not, they would destroy the foundations on which they stand. This would be true in the case of the Freudian psychology, which is a reductive psychology, reducing the building to the bricks, and then tipping a barrow load of rubble out on the lecture platform and crying, "Behold the stuff of which the vision of the architect is made." The Jungian psychology takes account of the fact that the architect builds with bricks, girders and other unpicturesque raw material, but it also takes account of the fact that edifices are not run up aimlessly. There is purpose in their building, they serve human needs and activities. The Jungian analyst uses the methods of the archaeologist, not the demolition gang. He tries to reconstruct from the stratified fragments the kind of life that was lived when Troy was an inhabited city. It is a more interesting, more fruitful, and incidentally a much cleaner occupation than the Freudian method. With Jungian psychology, the ancient mystery tradition can join hands. They may not speak the same language, but they have the same outlook. All that is needed is a Rosetta Stone bearing parallel inscriptions in different languages, the known and the unknown, to enable translation to begin and an immense wealth of data and experience to be made available for both sides of the council table. Psychologists have long been at work trying to penetrate the mystery symbolism from the hither side of the veil of the temple. Unfortunately, they made use of the Freudian reductive technique of nothing but, and the temple of the mystery soon lay in a heap of rubble at their feet, its beauty destroyed and its significance lost. They were then able to explore at their leisure the drains and cesspools under the foundations and discover to their delight that the soul, like the body, has certain needs that require sanitary arrangements, but is such a discovery, absorbing though it may be to those who have a taste for such things, any adequate substitute for the domes and spires of the architect's vision? Nor was the secret of the purpose of such a building to be deduced from its footings even by the most careful comparison with similar structures extant today. A railway station and a cathedral are not so dissimilar in their ground plans that a person ignorant of the nature of both might not confuse them in an age that has only had experience of aerodromes. Men's needs do not alter down through the ages, but only his methods of serving them. Let us, for a change, approach psychology from the yonder side of their veil of the mysteries. It will be an exercise not without its practical value, in my humble opinion. I would say to my fellow occultists, who love me not because of the amount of debunking I have done in my time, here is something by which you can check up on your findings and learn what is true and what is not, if you have a liking for such a proceeding. To the psychologists I would say, here is no poor relation, no illegitimate child of orthodoxy, but an heir to great estates, born of ancient lineage, coming with both hands full of jewels. For the understanding of what I have to say, it will be necessary to have a working knowledge of both occultism and psychology, for I do not pretend to begin at the beginning and lay the foundations of knowledge of either science in the minds of my readers. The minimum necessary can, however, be acquired from the study of two books, that by Dr. Jacobi, to which I have already referred, and my own Mystical Kabbalah. The long article that appeared in Monthly Letters 18 and 19 is a somewhat technical one, and gives some idea of what the fraternity expected of its initiates. Jeburah, as Kabbalistic students will know, is one of the spheres of the Kabbalistic tree of life that represents God in the aspect of severity, and within its symbolism are to be found images such as sword, spear, scourge and chain. In terms of esoteric grades, it relates to that of Adeptus Major, of whom, it should be said, there are not many around, although there is no lack of examples of the unbalanced expression of this divine principle in humanity at large. It is not unfitting that such a series of meditations should be appropriate towards the end of a world-encompassing war, the aftermath of which was to reveal unspeakable atrocities and the need for some sort of court of international justice to handle such crimes against humanity. Regrettably, the course of events over the ensuing 50 years has hardly made these concerns a thing of the past. Although not specifically stated, the tone of this material is as from one of the inner plane adepti rather than from Dionne Fortune herself, although there is of course an intermediate zone whereby the skilled initiate mediator becomes impressed or inspired rather than instilled or entranced for the purpose of communication. Monthly Letter Number 18, for May 1944, and Number 19, for June 1944. Concerning the use of the sword of Jeburah. The initiation of the sphere of Jeburah is that of Adeptus Major. Only one of the greater adepts can use the power of the sword, and unless he can use it, he is not a greater adept. The world cannot be ruled by love alone, but only by power in equilibrium, justice and mercy kissing each other. The four symbols of Jeburah are the sword, the cutting instrument which severs and cuts off, the spear, the piercing instrument which is a projection and extension of force, a solid ray as it were, emanating on the plane of Malkuth, the scourge, the punishing instrument that stings but does not slay and whose use is to stimulate to redemption, the chain is the restraining instrument which imposes limits on willful evil. These four sacred symbols are the weapons of Jeburah, and the greater adept must be expert in their use. The tasks of Jeburah, dual tasks, as all must be that deal in the sphere of manifestation, are to stimulate and to withstand, these being the positive and negative aspects of the work of a greater adept. At a certain stage upon the path, initiates pass out of the mild sphere of Tifereth and enter that of the severity of justice. The adept who initiates here must know no mercy, for cosmic law knows none, and what he spares, the lords of destiny, who rule over evolution, will punish. He aspires high who submits himself to the tests of major adepthood, and he must abide his fate. Here is no place for folly or weakness. Good intentions avail him nothing in the sphere of justice, nor may ignorance be pleaded in extenuation. Achievement is the only test and all weakness is burnt away. It is not the greatness of the strength that constitutes the test of this sphere, but its perfection in proportion. An ant is stronger than a man in proportion to its size, yet nature does not demand of an ant that it shall be as strong as a man, but only that it shall have the due strength of an ant. So of a simple nature we do not demand that it shall be as strong as a world leader, but only that it shall have the element of strength proportionate to its gifts, for lack of courage can invalidate the powers of the most gifted creatures, making them of no avail. The initiate of Jeburah submits himself to the tests of Jeburah, which try his courage and endurance, and if he be not found wanting in these, the sword of justice is placed in his hand and he becomes a greater adept. He must then wield the sword with wisdom and courage, for as the Yetzeratic text has it, courage is the characteristic virtue of Jeburah, which emanates from the primordial depths of Chokmah, wisdom. Mercy is not in this sphere, yet emanates it. And this is a paradox in which is to be found deep meaning. The wielder of the sword of Jeburah knows no mercy, but continues to the end. But even as Jeburah was emanated from Jejulah, mercy, when the lightning flash descends down the tree, so in its turn it emanates beauty in the center of the pillar of equilibrium, which, causes the influence to flow into all the reservoirs of blessing, and wherein is seen the vision of the harmony of things, and wherein are performed the mysteries of the crucifixion. Remember that it is said in the mysteries that no degree becomes functional till the next degree has been conferred. So mighty works of redemption in Tifereth do not begin until the initiation of Jeborah has been undergone. Thus is Jeborah balanced in equilibrium between mercy and beauty, and this is the secret of its work. In the great stories of the Table Round, which are the glyphs of Jeborah, even as the legend of the Graal is the glyph of Tifereth, the knights of King Arthur are famed for their strength towards the strong, their mercy to the weak, and their personal beauty. Thus does Jeborah confer the knighthood of the mysteries. The army is terrible with beautiful banners. Beauty is the true mean, and resides in right proportion. So always must the power of Jeborah be wielded in right proportion and in wisdom. The adept of Jeborah may not deal in mercy. When he has performed his work of initiation, passes out of his hands into the sphere of mercy, but in his hands, mercy would be but weakness, which in folly suffers evil to multiply or yields to the temptations of sloth. Ruthless and calm he abides, the servant of cosmic law, and mercy and beauty are the fruit of his works. Whoso serves in the sphere of Jeborah as an adeptus major lays his soul upon the altar of sacrifice. When he invokes justice upon another, he appears with him before the bar of divine justice and is judged equally with him. Therefore must his hands be clean and his heart free from guile, for guile and Jeborah do not abide together, the one counteracting the other. Immediately below Jeborah, in Hod, Mercury, is the sphere of guilt, even as immediately above this most dynamic of the Sephiroth is the sphere of Saturn, the giver of stability. Whoso has strength needs no guile, though guile be used to cause evil to destroy itself, but this is not the work of Jeborah, and when the sword is invoked the fight must be straightforward. Whoso takes in hand the sword must abide its judgment. If he err, he will perish by the sword. He may not wield it save in the name of justice, yet he may wield it to ensure justice for himself as well as for others, for is he not also one of God's children? Dare to invoke the might of Jeborah if your heart be pure and your hands clean. Whosoever has not known the experience of the initiation of the sword cannot pass on to the higher degrees, for it is by the power of the brave that evil is withstood. By the sword evil is cut off from its source of power, by the thrust of the spear its onslaught is checked, by the scourge are its exponents schooled, and by the chain are they restrained. The two greater implements of Jeborah work in the sphere of abstract force, and the two lesser in the sphere of its manifestation through personalities. Never forget, in wielding the powers of Jeborah, that the most effectual defense is attack. Therefore do not be afraid to drive at evil with the thrust of the spear, nor think it incumbent upon you to await its onslaught passively. But remember that in all things there is a rhythm, and even the most dynamic of spheres alternates between activity and passivity. But until the thrust of the spear has been given, the work has not begun. Passivity is folly in Jeborah. There is a method whereby evil is turned back upon itself and caused to sting itself to death with its own venom, but this is not the method of Jeborah. It belongs to Hod, which lies immediately beneath the fiery sphere upon the pillar of severity. And there is a method of working whereby the interplay of the Sephiroth, equilibrating among themselves, is used, and Mars can pass on to Mercury, and Mercury back to Mars, the task of salvation by destruction. 2. The Sephiroth Hod is the basal station of the Pillar of Severity, even as Bina is its apical station. No Sephiroth can ever be considered by itself, for it stands in terms of relationship, evolutional and functional, to other Sephiroth according to circumstances. In considering problems arising in the sphere of severity, the pillar of severity as a whole must be taken into account. The function of the Sephiroth Bina is, however, of so abstract and universal a nature that it does not require separate consideration when practical applications are under discussion. It represents forces of stability and inertia and is the basis of all organization. It reflects into Chst and back into Hod, whereas Chokhmah, the dynamic factor, reflects into Jeburah and back into Netzach, thus imparting to the central sapphire of the pillar of severity its dynamic aspect. Hod is a many-sided sapphire, as is indicated by the symbolic form of an hermaphrodite attributed to it. It is associated with Hermes, who lent his sandals and shield to Perseus for the slaying of the Gorgon in the name of justice, by which myth we may discern the nature of its connection with Jeburah. The winged sandals lent the swiftness of thought to the feet of the hero, and in the polished shield he saw reflected as in a mirror the deadly head of the Gorgon, thus sustaining no harm from her glances. Considered from the standpoint of the works of justice, we see in Mars the lord of tactics and in Mercury the master of strategy. Hod or Mercury likewise represents the human mind, for evolution has advanced up the tree through its sphere, thus causing it to become organized in terms of consciousness. It is therefore no formless sphere of force, as is Jeburah, but a sphere wherein mind operates in terms of that consciousness developed in Malkuth. When the powers of Jeburah descend into Malkuth, they reflect through Hod, wherein they undergo transmutation. Thus it is that with the advance of evolution brute force prevails less and the powers of the mind count for more. But let it never be forgotten that Mercury is a god of dual nature, and that in his evil aspect he is the lord of lies. Beware of this side of his nature when invoking him, and let the chivalry of the forthright Jeburah guard you against it, even as the shrewd skill of Mercury directs the blind force of the sword. In the sphere of Hermes that relates to Jeburah it is well to rely upon the methods of Perseus, and let the sandals of swiftness keep you out of harm's way by virtue of the penetrative power of thought which discerns the direction of the attack and evades it. Likewise use the shield of Hermes to gaze in as into a mirror, and do not use it as a weapon with which to strike the adversary. Hod is the sphere of mind, and there are certain factors in mind that make it a two-edged weapon when used for attack. It is too closely connected with the soul for such usage. It should be your aim, when using the powers of Hod in the work of Jeburah, to cause your adversary to destroy himself with his own venom rather than to destroy him with your own hand. In this way you avoid the reaction that falls upon those who take up the sword if the forces be not balanced exactly, and who, in the heat of battle, can hope so to balance them. When wielding the sword of Jeburah, gaze into the shield of Hermes and not upon the face of the adversary. Set the forces of Jeburah in motion with sword or spear, then flit aside on the winged sandals of wisdom and let the rhythm change over from sword to shield. The cosmic forces will not work for you unless you set them in motion. But having set them in motion, stand aside and let them fight for you. Then, when they have done their work, advance again, and discipline with the scourge or restrain with the chain as need shall arise. Remember always that after the work of the sword, the scourge or chain is needed to restrain the reaction, and you cannot rest immediately upon your laurels. These things concern the dark pillar of severity, which ever works in polarity with the bright pillar of mercy, thus establishing equilibrium. It has been said that those who take the sword shall perish by the sword, and that you resist not evil. It must ever be borne in mind when considering such sayings, and many others, that the grade of the hearer must be taken into consideration. As another saying has it, there is milk for babes and strong meat for strong men. Jeburah is a grade, and a high grade, in the hierarchy of the mysteries. Upon its initiates devolves a very serious responsibility. The powers of the macrocosm can only function in the world of men through the medium of men's souls. No special miracle will smite from heaven the enemies of God, but men may arise, dedicated and courageous men, men of might and vision, and through them the cosmic powers work. To them is opportunity given. Around them the powers are organized, and through them justice is done and the way cleared for the lords of light. In meeting aggression with mildness, do not forget that time plays a part in the suffering of the victims of the oppressor, and there is a limit to the time that they can endure, and why should you show mercy to the evil at the cost of the sufferings of the innocent? There is another saying which says, smite, and spare not. Cruelty and oppression can never learn the evil of their ways in any school save that of suffering. If you say to the oppressor, cease to do evil and learn to do good, and it shall be well with you. He will answer, It is well with me now. If, having conquered him with the sword and the spear, you let him be the one to cry peace, when it serves his purpose he will again take up the weapons of aggression, knowing that when it serves his purpose he can cry peace once more. He has much to gain and little to lose by his acts of aggression, if, when he has had enough of strife he can count on mercy. But if he knows that the scourge and the chain wait to complete the work begun by the sword and the spear, he will count the cost before he embarks upon his evil ways afresh, and the innocent and the simple shall sleep safe and reap where they have sown. Until the final day, the men of Jeborah, its initiates, and servants, must keep guard over the peace of the world to defend the defenseless and do justice among men, restraining the strong and upholding the weak. There is no other way whereby God's will may be made to prevail, and it is folly to think otherwise. Mercy has its place, but only as the equilibrator of justice. And justice has its place, but as the equilibrator of mercy. The equilibrium induced by the counteracting influences of the pairs of opposites is forever the law of manifestation. The watch must be kept in the world of men and in the unseen world of causation. The servants of justice may not rest from their arms, but must be ever at their posts lest the defenseless fall victims to the oppressor. It is the task of the strong to guard the weak and ensure them justice. They may not refuse battle without dishonor. When there is strife, they must wield arms upon one side or the other. Those who tread the path pass on from grade to grade. Not all are in the grade of Jeborah, but none may evade the grade and gain the goal. And remember this, to fail a grade does not mean merely that you go back to the grade below, but that you return to the commencement of the path and start all over again. It may be that by virtue of the experience gained thereon you shall pass onwards swiftly, but it does mean, it cannot mean other, than that those who cannot or dare not or will not wield the sword of Jeborah when duty calls must return to the hewing of wood and the drawing of water for a while. Likewise, even as there is a tree in every sapphire, so there is a sphere of Jeborah in the soul of every man, in the soul of the balanced being, and none other can achieve. All the Sephiroth are of equal power, each after its kind. Thus, and thus only can equilibrium be achieved. According to its stage of evolution will be the degree of conscious activation of the Sephiroth in the microcosm, and according to the path by which the soul has come will be the proportional development among them. This may be gravely irregular if development has been ill, balanced, as it is liable to be if superstition and not wisdom direct the choice or rejection of experience. Beyond the level of individualization, the Sephiroth function in accordance with the activities of the corresponding macrocosmic spheres as mediating to them through the group soul of the race to which they belong. Here again, force may be well or ill, balanced according to the wisdom and justice that rule the racial tradition. Do not expect perfection in the sphere of manifestation, for when perfection is reached, the universe enters upon the night of the gods and sinks into its rest in the unmanifest. As long as life endures the discipline of manifestation, the servers of Jeborah must stand on guard to see to it that unbalanced force is kept within due bounds. There is a grade of initiation wherein the initiate must enter the sphere of Jeborah and abide therein to learn its lessons, and the less of Jeborah there is in him, the longer must he abide there. He who is already a man of the sword passes on swiftly. There are times of crisis and emergency when even those who have passed on to the sphere of mercy may be recalled to man the ramparts of Jeborah, and none may refuse the call, for who are they to keep their garments unspotted from the world? The stains of toil and the scars of battle are more honorable insignia than the spotless robe of negation. Who was the cleaner at the end of the day of crucifixion, Herod or his victim? No greater love is possible than to give one's life in selfless service, and such service comprises more than the binding up of the wounds made by aggression, waiting till the victim is injured before aiding him. It means also to seek out aggression in its stronghold and overthrow it so that it may have no victims. The work of succor is good, but the work of prevention is better. And the aggressor can only be convinced of the error of his ways by making them unprofitable and painful. The only appeal that touches the heart of a ruthless and cruel man is that of pain to his own person. The way to his heart is through his skin. Distinguish, however, between the strong man who is ruthless in the selfish use of his strength and the weak and unprincipled man who plays jackal to the tiger. For such it is enough to make evil unprofitable for them to cease from it, but they can never be trusted not to return to their vomit if it suits them. Therefore, although it is not necessary to apply the scourge to their skin, as in the case of the strong who have chosen evil, it is advisable to keep it hanging within their sight and to crack it occasionally as an encouragement to persevere in the laborious paths of virtue, for not otherwise can virtue be sustained that is not strong enough to sustain itself. In judging men, and in meting out punishment and mercy, remember that on the plane of manifestation it is the personality alone that is dealt with. You must deal with them as they are in this incarnation, though taking account of what they were in past incarnations, which makes them what they are now, and taking account also of the racial destiny in which they are involved. For in reincarnating, the soul abides by the line of tradition, returning where it belongs by nature and custom, save in the case of those who are freed from their bondage in the group soul by virtue of their development. By teaching the lesson to individuals is the soul of a race instructed. Individuals, in the mass, can drag a race in the dust. Individuals, in the mass, can raise it to great heights. This they can do apart from a leadership if the spirit of the race is stirring. No leader can lead unless the led follow. It is the spirit of the race that brings forth the leaders. Those who speak with another breath are voices crying in the wilderness where there are none to heed. The spirit of the race can bring forth and bring to power nobility, wisdom, courage, and sound minds among its leaders. It can also bring forth demons in human form. It happens sometimes, however, though these times grow rare as more and more among men become individualized and freed from their bondage to the group soul, that one man may gain dominion over a race and direct its course. This can never be other than evil, for power corrupts. Where there is a great gulf fixed between the leaders and the led, you may know that this evil has occurred and that it forebodes disaster. When the spirit of the race itself has given birth to their leaders that guide its destiny, the hierarchy is pyramidal, and the ranks of leadership are constantly recruited from the masses. If the scene is witnessed of a royal court of great splendor while darkness is upon the face of the land, know that here is a dynasty that will not endure, but the people are innocent of evil. If the scene be that of widespread and intelligent co-operation with the workers of oppression, know that the soul of the people is involved, and must share in the expiation. In such a land, only the strong and the ruthless are safe, and only they survive. Each child must be reared in the tenets of ruthlessness and strength if he in his turn is to survive. Goodness and gentleness and justice are without help and power. Yet even in such a land they are absent from the human heart, for such is the nature of man, who is good as well as evil and evil as well as good, so that there is always help for him, though there is always danger from him. Make such a land safe for goodness and mercy and they will raise their heads and flourish, but how can they prevail against the forces of organized evil? You will not dispose of evil by making terms with his servants. Destroy the channels of evil, open the channels of good, and good will multiply as the corn stifles the well-hoed weeds. What shall it avail to break a nation that has gone over to evil and leave it broken for evil to re-organize? Nor is it even enough to destroy the organization of evil, good must be organized in its place. The clearest distinction between evil and good is to be found in the spirit of separateness and unity that prevails. Evil always leans to separateness and good to unity. When good builds an empire, it holds it by integrating it, thus bringing the blessings of civilization to backward races. When evil builds it, it is founded upon the subjugation and exploitation of the conquered peoples. Those who dwell in glass houses must not throw stones. Look well to the ways of your own empire as well as to the imperial ambitions of others. The power of good gains strength by integration. Draw into the building of the new age all men of goodwill wherever they may be found. undermine the powers of organized evil by integrating the forces of good within its sphere and uniting them with the commonweal of the world's life. Provide a channel of expression for forces that have been directed into evil ways but are not in themselves evil. Deny the dignity of citizenship to none who as individuals may prove themselves worthy. Remember that it is not in the power of the weak to resist their environment, and that weakness is a misfortune, not a crime. Let Jebera deal with the strong, but let Jejula guide the weak.